This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey y'all, this is Josiah Gray, and this is Half Street High Heat. Hope you enjoy today's episode.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Half Street High Heat, and it is a slightly different episode tonight, as I am not joined by Amanda, I am not joined by Ryan either, but I am joined by Trey, the man, the myth, the legend, the YouTube sensation. Can I call you a YouTube sensation? Does that fly?
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice ego boost. So
yeah, there you go.
Go ahead. I mean,
the like Half Street High Heat YouTube sensation. Trey, you can follow him on Twitter at reverse2r2s and follow the show at Half Street High Heat. I am still under the weather, so if you hear me like choke on my air like I just did, I apologize. So we are flu gaming this tonight for the third week in a row, but I'm here joined by Trey. Trey, what's going on?
Nothing much. Just watched the Nats secure a W tonight, which was cool, despite some, you know, hijinks from the manager, but we'll get to that, I'm sure.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, excited to join in for this week. Let's talk baseball.
I know, right? So it's been a little bit, about a month, because I think the last time you were on, we were doing our rankings, and that was slightly before the season got underway. What are your thoughts, you know, about a month in on this team relative to expectations, both for certain players and the team as a whole?
Oh, I mean, that's a mixed bag of.
We got time. It's the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, good. All right. Well, you know, I've actually been really impressed with the pitching. I mean, they're not statistically great, but they're not the worst team, which is like where they were last year. So that's definitely a good improvement. And a lot of the young guys specifically are pitching well. So that's a big plus early on in the season. Bats have been pretty bad. There's not really much else to say besides they don't have any power, especially from the left side. I mean, Candelario's leading the team in homers with like four. So that's not good. You know, plus Davey refuses to play Stone Garrett. So guy that could help is sitting on the bench. But yeah, no, my main gripe with this season so far is Davey. And I feel like how you feel, where they've been in these games and they've had chances to win more than what their record says, but Davey has kind of taken them out of some of those games. You know, most recently I would point at the Pirates series, game one of the doubleheader. It's a 4-3 game in the seventh or eighth. I mean, the Nats are right there. They're battling to make it it was a 4-1 game. So they're trying to make a comeback. And then you bring in, you bring in Ward, which was, I didn't have a problem with Ward, but he brings him back out for the eighth, and then he walks a guy, and then he brings in Bonda. So, I mean, why are we punting the game right there with a one-run lead? And then Bonda, like, loaded the bases, and then Ramirez had to come in and try and salvage it, and we lost. But, like, that's just one example of a game that we could have won, and Davey kind of played us out of it. But, you know, I'm actually kind of okay with where some of the young players are at. I mean, you know, I really like to see the way Ruiz is hitting the ball. A lot of line drives, despite some pretty awful luck, as per usual with him. But a lot of line drives from Luis Garcia, also one of the most unlucky hitters in baseball so far. So I actually like the way they're swinging the bat. And CJ Abrams has swung the bat decently well. He definitely has a hole at the top of the zone right now, but you know, he can go down and get that low pitch. So we like that. We like to see that his power is also coming through a bit with the homers. So there's definitely some stuff that I like. And most of the stuff I dislike is because of the manager. So I'd say overall, that's a better outcome than the players disappointing me completely.
Yeah, I would agree. That game on Saturday, it was game one of the doubleheader for anyone who watched it or was there or anything like that. So the final score was 6-3. I never thought the Nationals were all that competitive in that game. It seemed like they were pretty flat the entire game, and it was kind of almost surprising to see them be that close. And then, of course, my suspicions were confirmed with the second game in the doubleheader and how that game unfolded.
Yeah,
that was but that doesn't mean you just punt, right?
Yeah, that's my point. Like, they didn't score, and they might not have scored. They might not have won, but like,
right?
You're basically telling your team, "Yeah, we're not going to win." It's like, and, okay, well, now they're definitely not going to win
for sure. And like, Davey came out after the game. I don't know if it was after the first game or like the next morning after both of those games, but he had said, oh, if the Nats were tied or winning, he would have gone with the A bullpen. But it's like, why are we having preconceived plans for bullpen strategy? Like, why couldn't we go Ward? And if Ward did well and we found ourselves into a game, why couldn't we go to a Harvey then? Or like even a Finnegan then, or, and granted, and like you didn't know what was going to happen in game two. Right. But you, sure. you win the game that's in front of you. Right. And I mean, shoot. Yes. 16-1 sucks, but like you could have pitched position players from the fifth inning on. Like that's how that game unfolded.
Well, so yeah. Like, well, because of the rule change, they can't anymore, but.
Well, if they're down by 7 or more, they can.
Is that true?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't actually know that.
Yes.
Well, either way, Hunter Harvey pitched in the freaking second game. So I think he could have been right. Used in the first game instead.
Right, but that's kind of my point. And kind of like support yours is that, you know,
yeah, no,
was I'm it punting? You. I mean, maybe like...
As soon as Bonda
honestly,
came
honestly,
in,
kind of, yeah. Like I'm going to try, well, not try. I'm not going to try to defend him because I've never been one to do that to begin with. But like, to admit that you're going with your B bullpen in a game that was that close is punting. Like that kind of is the actual definition of the word. So it was just frustrating. And there's been obviously several situations like that.
And also, you know, the previous series, the Nationals showed you that they could make a comeback.
Right.
I mean, they had that crazy game in New York where, I mean, they didn't end up winning, but they took the lead. So like anything's possible at that point. Like, that's why I'm like, I don't think that like you said, they were flat. Like, I don't think they were going to score. I don't think they were going to win the game, but I mean, you're definitely not going to win if you don't give him a chance. So that definitely bothers me because he's done that he's done that pretty much throughout his whole time here, really. But
yeah,
definitely some winnable games that they have not been able to win, either by the bats just not being there or the manager.
Yep. Have you, did you mention Luis Garcia?
I mentioned quickly that he's just been very unlucky so far because the numbers aren't there.
Yes, but. Correct. So the reason he's been unlucky is that Darnell Coles is his hitting coach. That is just not a recipe for success. Like, and we give Davey a lot of flack and deservedly so, but Darnell Coles is like one of the worst things to happen to this team.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, even Jim Higgy looks like he's kind of turning a corner in some respects. The bar was a floor, but like a lot of the pitching has looked better than it was.
Yeah.
But again, the bar was a floor. We were the worst pitching staff in Major League Baseball last year. Without looking, and maybe you already have looked this up, you want to guess what Luis Garcia's launch angle is?
Well, it's probably pretty low. Although, you know, it's probably not as low as I think, though. I'll go negative five or something.
Well, you're too far, but
Okay.
The MLB average is 12.1, if that helps.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's definitely lower than that, but.
Oh, yeah. It's way lower than that. It's
probably two.
Close. 1.6. 1.6.
Yeah. That's probably true for a lot of Nats hitters,
which effectively means he's swinging flat, which, if you can, you know, picture this in your mind, if I can paint you a mental image, you're swinging flat and the ball will not ever get over the infield. Like, it just won't. You would have to hit it like a, what's the ESPN guy? The sports science guy. I'm not the sports science guy.
I don't know.
John Brinkett. Anyways,
I can't remember.
You would have to hit it like 150 miles off the bat to hit it over the infield while swinging at a 1.6 launch angle. And like, Luis Garcia has pop too. That's definitely the thing with this Nats team. It's not like they're a team full. I was going to say CJ Abrams, but even he has had two home runs in the past week. Like, it's not like they are without that profile. They have guys that could do that, but they're being told to swing down on the ball. Like, they're trying to take advantage of the lack of the shift, which is a thought process. But hey, if we can hit doubles in the gap, that's way better than, you know, ground balls through the infield, you know, and this team can do that. It's just, my God, 1.6. And it's not like he was all that high to begin with. He was a 5.5 last year and a 4.1 launch angle in 2021. So there wasn't much room to get lower than what he was already doing. And he somehow has. Like, you weren't even that far off with your negative launch angle. Like, he's almost swinging down on the ball, which is, why would you hit the ball straight into the ground? It just makes no sense. So that's frustrating, but I do love that he's hitting second. I mean,
oh well, there's a lot to like about how his approach this year as well. Like, these numbers are going to turn because, you know, even though he has the low launch angle, the expected numbers are still with, like, he's just getting really unlucky. And like, even this week, I feel like I can just remember so many line drive outs from him. So I don't think he should change too much, but yeah, you definitely want him to elevate because he's got way more pop than they're giving him credit for. He could be a, you know, 15-20 homer guy if they let him. So I agree with that. They gotta probably raise the team wide launch angle, but that seems to not gonna be a thing until they get rid of Coles, because that's,
man, I wonder if
hitting philosophy, I suppose.
Can you look up a team's launch angle? I'm sure you can. Interesting.
I don't know.
I'll have to find that. But yeah, so I just wanted to point
actually,
that out.
Maybe.
Because, all right, I'll try to stall while you look it up.
Yeah.
There was just like several instances, like you mentioned, of guys that just don't have a launch angle. But then you look at someone like Keber Ruiz, and his launch angle is fine. It's at a 15.1. But you also see kind of the benefits of that. He has more extra base hits. And I mean, he only has two home runs, but he doesn't have quite the same pop that that Garcia does. But it's just, I don't know. But he was kind of going the opposite way, where his launch angle was really high coming into the league. He was at a 24, like, degree launch angle. I almost said average. That's not right. 24 degree launch angle. And then he's had to reel that back in. It was 18 and then 15 and then 15 so far this year. So Garcia was like too low, and now it's somehow even going lower. So that's frustrating.
Yeah, I actually have found the answer.
Oh yeah.
They are currently 24th in the league with a 10.6 average launch angle. It's actually higher than I thought, but still low in terms of the rest of the league and below average.
I need to figure out who's raising
right there with average. Right there with the Mets and Braves. Okay. They're actually higher than the Mets and Braves. And the Braves have like, they're like 30-2 or whatever. they're playing so well.
Well, their pitching is also just insane.
Oh yeah, no, there's, jeez, that team is nuts. But yeah, no, so 10.6 on the average launch angle is below average, but a little bit better than I thought. But yeah, Ruiz, again, another guy who gets unlucky as well. I mean, he had a rocket line drive into the corner tonight that got caught. I was like, geez, man, what do you got to do to get an extra base hit sometimes?
Yeah.
Just hit it over the wall, I guess. That's what they're going to have to start doing.
Yeah, that's for sure. But yeah, along that, we kind of got off track there, but this team could be good. And they were, for the most part, good over the past week. So tonight, we're talking about the Mets series, the Pirates series, and then we'll cover the first two games of the Cubs series since we're recording a little bit later in the week. And ironically, in those eight games, the Nats are 4-4. So if you had told us that, you know, in any sort of eight-game stretch, the Nats went 500 at the beginning of the season, you're like, yeah, like that's a good stretch of baseball, which it was. But it was a little bit more up and down than I would have liked to have seen.
Definitely.
The consistency is very much not there. And there tends to be a pattern. When the starting pitching does well, the team, for the most part, answers. When the starting pitching struggles in any regard, even like if you want to use Mackenzie Gore's start yesterday against the Cubs, like, it wasn't his best start, certainly, but he gave up 4 runs. It's not like he gave up 12, right? It wasn't
the offense. Yeah. Sorry to cut you off, but I was just going to say the offense did not help him at all by, I mean, how many one pitch ground balls against Drew Smiley last night? Like, they did not give him any time. Like, he had the long second inning and they went like 7 pitches in the next inning. Like, work a count, guys. Come on. Let's give your pitcher a chance to rest. We don't have to hit one pitch ground balls.
They've done that so much. Yeah, that's
definitely the Coles hitting philosophy is be aggressive and put the ball in play early, and it's not translating to results.
There's been several games, and I believe yesterday was one of them, the Drew Smiley game, where they've gone the full game without working a walk, and it's just like,
that's possible. It could have possibly been yesterday because he was all around the zone.
I'm pretty sure it was, because I know they went 2 games. Without working a walk in the Guardian series, and there was 2 games after the fact. Like, it's been
and you're
pretty...
just getting baited into that.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what Drew Smiley wants you to do, is to swing it, pitches low zone, and hit ground balls.
I actually have this up. Let's look. But yeah, the Nats are 24th in the league in walks. And
yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, it's not good company. They're behind the Tigers for what that's worth.
Yeah.
So, and no shocker, the best teams in the league, or in terms of working walks, Dodgers, Padres, Mets, Pirates, Orioles, Braves, Guardians. Like, I mean, those are your top seven. So no surprise that working more walks is conducive to more success. And yeah, I don't remember what I was saying. Oh, over the past 8 games. So a little bit of a roller coaster. You would have liked that to have been more consistent, so you have something to build on, because it's hard to, you know, maintain success or sustain success when you're constantly having to dig yourself out of a hole that, you know, was kind of unnecessary, right? When you have a big win and you have that building block to work from, you know, and especially in a series a stretch of games like this where you don't have many off days. Like, you should be able to sustain that and carry that over one game to the next, but they seem to completely forget who they are on a daily basis, and it's crazy.
Yeah. You know, I guess the one thing I will say is, you know, they had the rain delay, so maybe that kind of stunted the momentum.
No, dude, I'm not going to give them a pass for that. Yeah, I look what the Pirates did.
16-0 stinker is definitely the big sore spot from this past week of
games. I'm glad you said 16-0, because that one run did not count. I refuse to count it.
Dude, I no joke forgot about it. I totally scrubbed that from my memory.
Not counting it.
No, we're not going to count that one. No. But yeah, so 16-0, as I said. That one definitely hurts, because you feel like before that this week they were playing all right. I mean, if the game won, they didn't hit that great, but they were in it at least. But then you have the total stinker. So that one definitely doesn't feel good. Really ruined their run differential for this stretch of games too, because that was actually looking decent for a while, but now it doesn't.
If anything, it got the run differential back to where I thought it would be.
Yeah, I guess. I guess. I mean, that is a testament to the Nats staying in these games for the most part, but
right. But that goes to my point that I feel like I'm like the argument I'm making every single episode we do is that this team should be better, and it comes down to the manager. And it's like some people have joined the cause, which I appreciate. I love you guys. But some people are still so like opposed to the idea that the manager has an effect on like wins and losses. Like I made this argument, and I'll get your thoughts. We were going to save this, you know, for an argument down the line, whatever. Like, how many wins do you think? Let me back up. Who do you think the best manager in baseball is
right now?
Right now, if you could pick a manager,
probably. I would love to have Scott Servais. I think I'd really love to have him.
Okay, interesting. That's not even my top three, but okay. Anyways, damn, we could go down a rabbit hole in this discussion. Add him at Scott Servais to the Nats. How many wins do you think he brings to this team?
Yeah, well, that's exactly why I picked him, because I mean, I remember in the 21 season with Seattle, they overperformed their Pythagorean win total by like 14 games. So clearly the manager was pushing the right buttons in that case. And then last year, obviously they break into the playoffs, and it's a young team still. So we got a young team. They got a young team over there, but they're doing really, really well. So that's kind of my thought process. There's other guys too that I could go to, but that was the reason why he popped in my head first.
For sure. And like my argument, and someone tried to like say I was overvaluing the manager position, which I don't think I am at all whatsoever. If anything, he was undervaluing it. Idiot. I think a manager can add 15 to 20 wins. I'm not saying every a really good manager can to this team. Obviously, you're not gonna put someone on like the Dodgers and give them 15 plus wins, because the Dodgers are already winning 90 games. I'm saying to this team, this team could go from a 55 win team to a 70 win team with good management. And I'm not saying good managers are easy to come by. So don't hear what I'm not saying, but I do think there is so much potential for this team to perform better just by better management without changing the roster at all. And if you do change the roster, get, you know, just MLB average players, you know, you're looking at like a mid 70s to possibly knocking them on the door of 80, but instead we're on pace for like 57 wins.
Yeah.
Because decisions.
I had one thing to add as well. I think, if anything, you know, manager can be the reason why you lose a game as opposed to why you win.
Well, yeah, that's kind of where the wins come from.
Yeah, you're gaining wins because you're like, it doesn't really look like the manager's doing anything special because they're just doing a good job. So it's like you kind of notice the way that a manager causes your team to lose more than you would if you had a competent manager and you're just winning.
For sure, but like that's the argument, because that's where the wins come from in those situations.
Exactly.
In like the 16-1 game, I don't know if any manager would have like
salvaged that. That's a different
story. But like
it's
competitive games, because I mentioned this last week. It's like if you look at the Nats like last 20 games, I think like 15 of them have been save situations. Like they've been in these games. Like it's not like they're all total blowouts. And in the games that aren't save situations, they're like slightly under 500. Like they're not getting blown out. Like on Sunday's win against the Pirates, they won 7-2. So it's like, you know, they're in these games and there is a shot. Look at the past week. They're 8-8. And I know that kind of contradicts my Davey statement, but like, if you look at the pitching over the last week, that's kind of carried us as opposed to pushing the right buttons, so to speak.
Yeah. And also there's situations in there where they maybe could have won a game.
Like the game 3 of the Mets series.
Yeah. And we get overused Mason Thompson. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately that was the first time where he finally showed some signs of, but like either way, he pitched him for 3 innings in a game where he didn't need to go 3 innings in game 1 of that series.
I will say I freaking love the 3 inning save. I was rooting for it. I
love up. I but love
I,
the
I
fact
also
that
wouldn't
Thompson,
have to put him in the Thursday game either.
Yeah, after that. But I'm totally with you. I love when relievers can throw a ton of innings. But if they can't stay with that production, then there's no reason to push it. Like, he, just because Thompson can give you multiple innings doesn't mean he has to. Like, right. And yes, for the purposes of the score sheet, like the 6 innings scoreless from Gray, the 3 innings scoreless from Thompson, that looks so good. Like, I'm totally with you on that. Like, it's very aesthetically pleasing almost. But yeah, though, he's starting to get overused. And tonight, the Nats ended up winning, but Thompson came in on his second day in a row and wasn't particularly amazing. And he still got some outs, but gave up the home run to Wisdom. So definitely got to try and rein in his innings a little bit this month. Give him a little bit of a break if they can.
Yeah, and I think that's what you're starting to see is, like, he's good, like, on the days where he has rest. Yeah, he's great on the days he has rest and, like, where he's feeling 100%. He is one of the best relievers in baseball. Definitely. But if he goes too long, or it's not even if he goes too long, it's if he comes back before he's ready, he is noticeably different and not as effective. Like,
stuff
he was tonight.
Stuff is way less sharp, and you get the sinker starting to go over the middle of the plate, whereas he has been, when he's sharp, he's just dotting corners with that thing.
We got some breaking news.
Oh, really?
Jake Irvin is going to make his MLB debut tomorrow.
No way.
Corey Abbott has been optioned back to Rochester.
Wow.
What the heck?
Okay. That was not what I was... I just figured they were going to save Abbott for tomorrow, but then they used him the other night, but then they still could have gone. Interesting. All right. I don't think he's ready, but it's kind of out of necessity since they pitched Adone tonight in Rochester.
They kind of backed themselves into a corner.
I really love Jake Irvin's stuff, but
me too. This isn't what the heck about Jake Irvin. This is, you call up Corey Abbott to start. You know, Cool's going on the IL.
Why was he?
And then you pitch him in relief, and they tried to frame it as, oh, it's a bullpen day. Bullpen days don't usually last 2 innings. And especially like a day before he's supposed to start.
Weird, definitely weird the way that they manage that. But Jake Irvin, I'm cool with this. It'll be interesting at least. I don't think he's ready, like I said, but I wouldn't expect him to stay with the team that long. He'll probably just get like this start, and then I don't know.
Cool's
on the IL, I guess.
Yeah, talk about that. Jake Irvin has not been particularly good this year.
No, he's struggling with the walks, and that's why I'm saying he's not ready. But
yeah, he has 11 walks in 22
innings. If he keeps the walks down, it's pretty hard to hit him. He's got 2 plus pitches in the fastball and the breaking ball, and the changeups are working in progress. But
he's still giving up 9.3 hits per 9 innings.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's not. That's. I'm not.
And again,
this
is not me trying to shit on Jake Irvin.
Yeah,
we both agreed he's not ready right now. The thought process of this team is.
It is unfortunate. I'm not gonna be too upset just because obviously everything got kind of upended with the Cavalli injury, and Cool was supposed to be in this role where he was going to be able to come up and take this start, but obviously he's had to pitch and then he got hurt. So, but all right, Jake Irvin against the best team in the National League tomorrow by WRC+.
Yeah. Good luck, buddy. I'm sorry the Nationals are doing this to you.
Yeah. I mean, just try and throw strikes, basically. Try and keep up. if you get hit, you get hit, but try not to block
always,
too many guys.
Sorry, I'm just like reading all the like beat reporters.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. That was always my least favorite piece of advice as a pitcher. It's like, you know, either just throw strikes or you're all around it. I know I'm all around it. I can't throw a strike right now.
Yeah, no, well, from a pitcher's perspective, obviously you're like, okay, so you just want me to throw meatballs in there? Then, so like, obviously you don't want to do that, but
right. No, no, it was just funny.
Yeah, no,
it was like semi PTSD when you said that.
It's fun. Well, I was saying that's exactly what I was thinking about Josiah's start the other day. Once he got the 6-run lead, and he actually did exactly that. So that was pretty good stuff from him.
Yeah. All right, let's get into the nitty gritty of it all with our good, the bad, and the ugly. Just so we can kind of hit on all the points we want to make, because obviously with 8 games in the past, not the past week, but well, honestly, the past week because of the doubleheader. But since we last recorded, we have a lot of baseball to cover. And like we said, it's been a lot of roller coaster up and down. The obvious place to start is Josiah Gray. Josiah Gray is absolutely phenomenal. Absolute dog. I can't say enough great things about him. Obviously, for our longtime listeners, you know, he's been on the podcast before. That has, quite frankly, made me a lifelong fan of his. Don't care what happens, I will always root for him. But it is nice to see the stats and production match, like the opinion of him I have in my head. In this year, it's been 6 starts. I know that. But this year has been nothing short of just like a true pleasure to watch from Josiah Gray. Start against the Mets was the start of arguably his career. Like, I don't think that's too much of a stretch to say. I mean, he's had some really good starts before, but he went 6 innings against the then NL East division leaders. 6 innings, 4 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 9 strikeouts. And it was a really kind of defining start for him, like knowing that coming off the Twin Series where the Nats looked good. But if you go just slightly before that, you know, to the Orioles series and even the Guardian series, the Nats didn't look particularly good. And, you know, in the Twins series, the final game, they lost and looked pretty unconvincing doing so. And going to a division rival, especially the division leader, it's like, you know, you needed someone to kind of steady everything. And he did that. 6 innings, shut piece. And obviously that was the Mason Thompson 3-inning save game. Like that was the win of the year. And I'm not trying to be hyperbolic or anything. It might be the win of the year when it's all said and done, because it was just that good. Like I can't remember the last time I had that much enjoyment watching a Nationals game. And that's what we've gotten from Josiah Gray through basically every start of his, you know, minus the Braves one, but it was the first start of the year. We won't count that. The big thing here is he's only allowed 1 home run since that first start against Atlanta, which was obviously, as everyone knows, his big problem last year. And the other problem he had that kind of gets overshadowed because of the home runs was the walks. Yeah, he walks some people, but he has scaled it down to a point where it's totally manageable. Like it's not, you know, top 3 in the league anymore or anything like that. Very manageable, keeping the hits down, keeping the hard contact down. And he's gone at least 5 innings in every one of his starts. His start against the Pirates, also a time after Saturday's doubleheader where he got sweep and in embarrassing fashion in a 16-1 defeat, you hand the ball to Josiah Gray, needing a guy to steady the ship. And he did it again. 6 innings, 3 hits, 1 run, 3 walks, but 6 strikeouts. The 1 run is key there. And he didn't look good at all. Well, not at all, but he didn't look good. He really struggled. And he still found a way to bunker down, limit the walks, limit the damage, and still go 6 innings in a game where the Nats didn't really have many options for relievers. It was awesome. I can't say enough good things about him. Yes, you know, there's outlying stuff that you can really pick apart if you want to be all nitpicky and stuff. I'm just looking at what's in front of me, because that's what's most important, is like the bottom line, which is Josiah Gray, especially after the year he had last year. It's been awesome to see. Can't say enough about my dog, Josiah Gray.
I couldn't. I mean, I think you pretty much nailed everything. The one thing I would say is, I would say his start against Pittsburgh was almost as impressive to me
yes.
as his start against the Mets. You know,
absolutely
against the Mets,
agree.
He purely dominated them. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He dominated them.
Like, against the Pirates, he lost his slider, which is his best pitch. He lost
and exactly,
couldn't find it.
He completely had no slider basically all day. And he still went out and he used his curveball and he used his fastball and he used the cutter a little bit and got outs. And that's what you got to do. That's what the best pitchers do. When they don't have their best stuff, they still manage to give a good, solid performance, keep their team in the game. In that case, win the game because he had a lead. And he pitched really well after the third inning. Once we got the bigger lead, he was like, he basically, you know, was like, I got to attack the zone. Can't be walking people. And I don't think he walked a single batter after the third inning. And
no,
he just went
not.
After guys. He just went after guys and got outs. And the sixth inning, he like found his fastball and got two strikeouts at the end. So that was a good little ending he ended up with six strikeouts in six innings. So that's pretty crazy to even think about, because he really didn't have much of anything with the slider. I mean, he might have thrown like three good ones all day. So just really great stuff from him overall, and just super excited because like I'm obviously a huge fan because he's been on the show, and he just seems like a nice guy. He just seems like he wants to get in there and compete and be one of the better guys on the field. So. Yeah, really fun to see him succeeding, and hopefully continues for the rest of the year.
Yep, absolutely, and certainly hope it continues, because it's been one of the few good consistent storylines. Like, it's nice having a reason to tune in before, like, you realize you have to tune in. You know, whatever the
yeah,
the
I'd argue he's unfolds. He's a must watch guy right now, right this second.
I would agree, certainly. All right, the next guy, Mackenzie Gore, and I know he struggled yesterday. We alluded to that or talked about that earlier. I'm more focused on the Met series, because even though that's the oldest series at the time we're recording of the series we're talking about, it was the best one.
That's the most important one too.
Yeah,
division
and
rival.
I don't want to
on the road.
Just brush it aside because it's the oldest one and not the most recent. Mackenzie Gore was freaking phenomenal in that series as well. I didn't think we could get any better than Josiah Gray. And listen, I wasn't expecting Mackenzie Gore to get shelled or anything, but Mackenzie Gore looked really damn good too.
Yeah, those
arguably
two pitching
better.
Performances back to
arguably
are,
better, which was hard to top. And I can only imagine kind of the banter in the dugout after, or the clubhouse between those two pitchers after those two games.
Oh, you know, Mackenzie was all in on the next game after he saw Josiah shove the day before. He's a competitive guy, so
that's what we call building off your momentum, or building some momentum.
Yeah, freaking love that.
Like, it just it's contagious, truly. Mm-hmm. Mackenzie Gore against the Mets on the 26th, six innings, four hits, one run, only two walks, which has been really his Achilles heel this season. 10 strikeouts, which we all knew would come eventually. We had seen it in his first couple starts. The strikeout stuff played. It was just the walks in the overall, like, you know, strike to ball ratio was not working in his favor. It was not letting him get deep into the games. Like, he would have to come out before the sixth inning because of pitch count. And this one, he did much better job of limiting the kind of almost like chase pitches, because like, a lot of the time he's almost trying to be too perfect and trying to go like dot outside corner, but instead he misses like two baseballs outside.
Yeah. That was yesterday.
Yeah. Which he tried to do yesterday.
Yeah.
Right. But in the Mets game, he was just like trusting his stuff. And that's why he was able to get deep in the game. Strikeout pitchers, typically, unless you're like a unicorn, like Max Scherzer or Justin Verlander or anyone like that, strikeout pitchers typically aren't going to go deep into games just because of pitch count. You know, to go, what, nine innings and 110 pitches, you throw like 12 pitches in at bat or an inning, whatever that math equates to. But like 12 pitches to get three outs, like that's it's just not a lot of room for error. If you think about it, if a count goes full, and then you strike him out, that's six pitches right there of what you're allotted. And, you know, that's if, you know, you don't have base runners or anything like that. So you know, a strikeout pitcher like Mackenzie Gore isn't going to always be able to go like 7-8 innings, but he's still young. He's still learning how to pound the zone efficiently and just overall trust his stuff. And to see it all come together against the Mets in the way it did after the game, the opening game that we talked about with Josiah Gray. Awesome. Just truly a spectacle. Like, really, the only thing hurting him right now is the walks. Everything else looks great. Like, he's 69th percentile on average exit velocity. Nice.
Nice.
72% barrel percentage, 82% whiff percentage, 81% K percentage, like 95th percentile in extension. I mean, he's doing so much well, and he's effectively a rookie. So you expect him to build on the stuff. The only thing hurting him is walks. And if he can reel that in, he's going to be so freaking good, dude. I can't. I'm like salivating at the thought of it. Like, just having someone, not just someone, but two guys in the rotation that could potentially like live up to the hype. It's just like a dream come true.
Yeah, I mean, his four-seam fastball is one of the most unhittable fastballs in this league because of the combination of the spin, the velo, and the extension that he gets on that pitch. I mean, he's basically releasing that thing 5 freaking feet down the mound. That's an exaggeration, obviously, but like it just gets on hitters so quickly that they can't square it up. So
yeah, the average exit. So I was just gonna make a point to support your claim. His average exit velocity of any of his four pitches, so fastball, curveball, slider, changeup, is the lowest on his fastball at 85.4 miles.
Yeah,
an hour.
The base numbers on his fastball are which just stupid.
Like that's not normal, because the harder you throw, the, you know, more often that velocity is used against you. Like a harder throwing pitcher leads to a higher exit velocity if you get barreled. So the fact that he is like the lowest of his pitches when he's throwing mid 90s is just goes to show how like hard it is to hit.
Yeah, they just can't square it up. They get it off the wrong part of the bat. He has a high ground ball percentage as well, and most of those ground balls are pretty softly hit just because guys can't square anything
and
up.
And he throws it 60% of the time, so it's not like they're not seeing it often.
Yeah, and it's rare to be able to throw a pitch that often and not get it crushed, but because it's just so good, especially when he locates it right at the letters. I mean, and he does pretty well. Like, that's definitely, when he goes for the strikeout, he's probably coming with that letter-high fastball, and it doesn't matter if you know it's coming. Like, it almost doesn't matter. And his curveball is a hammer, by the way. Let's not forget. That pitch is really, really good. So if he's got both of those working like he did against the Mets, he's basically impossible to hit.
Yeah, basically. And you know, he's going to have bad starts. Like, that's the thing you want to kind of weave into your expectations. It's not going to be great start after great start, great start. Like, I'm almost dreading the rough Josiah start, because it's going to happen. Like, it just does. And that's not going to be an indictment on Josiah. It's not an indictment on Mackenzie. It just happens. But I just don't want it to end. Like, I don't want my bubble to burst. So like with Gore, it's like, okay, all right, we got his bad start out of the way. Now his next start against it won't be the Cubs, maybe the Diamondbacks. Yeah, like, all right, now we get the good Gore again. Like, because no, there's no way it can be two in a row or anything. Like, that's kind of how my brain's working.
Yeah, but we hope it's not, but no. it could happen. You never know. These guys are young.
For sure. But that's the point. It's just, you know, they're young. It's going to, they're the ones that have the excuse to have the roller coaster performances. Just because they are young and they, you know, are going to have good days and bad days like anyone would. All right, next guy in the good section, Keibert Ruiz. Over his last, I just had to refresh my page and it like took me back. Cool. I was gonna say over his last 7 games and give you those numbers, but I don't have them. Over his last 7 games, he's been quite good. So instead, I will give you his Baseball Savant page. 100th percentile in K percentage. He does not strike out. 98th percentile in whiff percentage. He doesn't miss. He does need to make some better swing decisions. Like, Ryan was saying last episode, how he kind of needs to swing less because he can better choose the pitches he's swinging at if he just waits a little bit longer, as opposed to just swinging at anything in the zone. And that might lead to some more hard hit baseballs, because right now he's 36th percentile in average exit velocity. If you're like seeing the ball that well, you should in theory be able to hit it a little bit harder than he is, but that's not to take away from him, because he's been quite good recently. Again, I'm trying to pull up these numbers and they're not pulling. Trey, you go.
I don't have the numbers either, but I do love me some K-Bear Ruiz. When he's locked in, which he was during the Twins and the Mets series, you could see that he actually was starting to take some of those pitches where he might have swung at other times. And honestly, that Mets series, he could have been 10 for 12. I mean, one of the games, I swear he had four line drive outs, so he was all over it. And his numbers could be even better, just like Garcia's. But overall, I really like the way he's called games this year as well. I mean, you got kind of bad news with the Cavalli stuff, and he's still managed to get some innings and decent performances out of some of these starters. And this is actually a specific point I was going to reference in a video I'm making, but I'll go ahead and say it here. Both Josiah and Mackenzie Gore referenced Ruiz in their post game after those starts versus the Mets.
We love that.
And we're like, basically like what Mackenzie said was he shook him off one time and they scored a run, so he didn't do it again. So you love to hear that, especially with the young players together. So pretty much most of what Ruiz is doing is good stuff. He just got to get some of these balls to drop on some of these line drives, man. I mean, he's definitely a talented hitter. And yeah, but like you said, sometimes those swing decisions can be an issue. So, but I feel like he's, you know, improving slightly in that regard. So just, it might take a while for him to not be so aggressive, but.
Well, yeah, it's certainly progress over last year, which is all we want.
Yeah. No, he's definitely continuing to grow, which is
right.
All we can ask for. And
for a catcher, we need you to grow in more ways than just offense. And he is, like you mentioned, like with his game calling. And you know, there was times last year where it didn't look like he was calling a good game, like just, and not to put it all on him, but it seemed like he was he and the pitcher, his battery mate, were like not on the same page often, but several times throughout the year. And this year it's like I almost don't even notice it, because that's how seamless it goes. Like, that's how good it, you know, that I've always said that to my players. It's like, sometimes the best things are the things you don't notice, because it means nothing's going wrong. You know, it's just like, I like not having to pay attention to it, because it's not going wrong. It's just like the way it's supposed to be. And I could just like focus on the other things, you know. K-Bear Ruiz, this actually is slightly skewed, because I'm going to pull up his last 10 games. He's gone 0-for-8 to start the Cubs series. You know, no big deal. It happens.
Again, had a rocket line drive in the gap or in the corner tonight. Right. They got caught. So
right. But still, if you still include those games over his last 10 games, 300, 12 hits, a home run, 3 RBIs, and 4 runs scored. Like, he is hitting the ball really, really well. And obviously, if you take out those Cubs games, those numbers skyrocket up, because those are the numbers really dragging you down at the moment. He's been really, really good lately. And I don't I said this today's Tuesday, so I said it's Sunday's lineup. It was Alex Call, Luis Garcia, K-Bear Ruiz, Joey Meneses, Jamer Candelario. I said that's a great 1-5. That should not change regardless of righty lefty matchup.
Yeah, I believe that was actually the same that they went with tonight, so that's good that they
exactly that. Thank you. They did it obviously Sunday, they won. They did it today, they won. They did not do it yesterday,
they lost.
I mean,
stats speak for themselves.
Exactly. Like, you know, there's really no refuting that. Sorry, I'm right. I just think you want a guy with that bat to ball skills higher in the order.
And you're not going to catch me arguing against that. I wanted him to hit second and Garcia to hit first for a while, but I'm okay with Call in the leadoff spot. He gets on base a lot.
So. Especially recently. We will actually talk about him in a minute. Yeah. But before that, I'm going to talk about the guy who I really want to lead off, and I will die on this hill. CJ Abrams is a dog, dude. He's a dog. Over his last 10 games, let me pull that up really quick. But if we're sticking on that Mets series really quick, I guess we didn't really talk about with Ruiz. But that Mets series, CJ Abrams had his defining moment with a grand slam in what I mentioned that Josiah game was, one of the first games I've been so encapsulated by in such a long time. And it has been a long time, 3 years since the World Series. That was a long time, a lot of baseball without being as invested as I used to be. But that Mets series was super entertaining. And even though we lost that last game, CJ Abrams and the way that game was going, Trevor Williams got hit around because I chalk it up to the Mets had him last year and knew this, the inside track on how to hit him.
They were all over him early.
I expected that. And so, Trevor Williams, all in all, he would pitch great tonight. He's been great awesome this year. But we were down 7-3. We were we won't sweep, but it's still a really good series. But CJ says no, not yet. So 7-4, bases loaded. And they're CJ Abrams is up. He's not a home run threat. Dude goes ding dong, grand slam. It was electric. If you haven't seen it, I are you living under a rock? It was just an all-time moment.
Even MLB tweeted that one.
Yep.
I mean, they even came in to a Nats game to tweet something we did. So
yep.
How about that?
Yep. So over his last 10 games, 294, 10 hits, 2 home runs. That's important. 9 RBIs
and a double.
5 runs. What the heck? I pulled this up on StatMuse, the way they gave it to me. CJ Abrams has a batting average of 294, 10 hits, 2 home runs, 9 RBIs, and 5 runs scored in 10 games in his last 10 games in his career. So I was reading 10 games twice. I was like, wait, what? But yeah, CJ Abrams has been on fire lately. If you look at his overall numbers, they're not anything to write home about. But just look at what he's done for you lately. The past 10 games, I mean, that's a third of the season. He's been really, really good.
Yeah. I liked the way he swung the bat this year, he's below average by the numbers, but he's definitely swinging the bat with a lot more confidence than he was, especially at the beginning of when he came in last year.
For sure. And there's things he needs to get better at, but progress is all we ask. That's all we want is just progress. He's striking out a little bit more than you like. He's not walking as much as you would like, but it's better than it was last year. And, if Ryan was here, he would talk about his barrel percentage. Like he went so long without barreling a baseball. Now we're finally getting him back to squaring up the baseball and hitting it hard and hitting it effectively because.
Yeah, he had sorry to cut you off, but again, he had a 109 single tonight. I mean, 109. That's impressive.
He went 3-for-3 tonight and had the effectively game-winning RBI.
Yeah.
Clutch Abrams. He's clutch. Yeah, he's Clutch Abrams. That's his superhero name now. He's Clutch Abrams. And the fact that he's leading the team in RBIs.
He is now. That's right. Yeah.
Was for a while, and then I think Call overtook it, but now he took it back. I believe. Call
had a two tonight as well. So
the guy batting first and the guy batting eighth and ninth are leading the team in RBIs. What is the middle of the order doing? So CD Abrams, there's going to be growing pains. We talked about this early in the season. The errors, the some of the swing decisions. If you can just relax a little bit and just take a step back, you're gonna like what you see. And in some cases, you need to look a little bit harder, and you're going to need to look at the last 10 games as opposed to the season stats, right? If you just try a little bit, whether it be take a step back or, dig a little bit deeper, do some research, you're going to like what you see. And he's also 22. He has so much room to grow, and I'm excited. I'm excited. Is he going to be a perennial all-star? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But like, I'm liking what I see so far. And, you know, there's definitely signs of potential to grow. And that's all we want.
Couldn't agree more.
Absolutely. All right. So let's talk about Alex Call, because I'm not going to apologize, because that just wouldn't be me. but also, like, I also think it was warranted because he was really bad the week prior. Like, he was really, really bad.
Oh, definitely.
But maybe I need to give myself some credit for calling him out, pun intended, because now he's awesome. Like, he has really turned it on recently. He added another home run. Like I mentioned earlier, he's tied or might be leading the team in RBIs. I'm actually going to refine this a little bit. I was going to pull the last 10 games for Call, but let's do the last seven.
Probably even better.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, he went oppo against the Mets. And I was
all right, so I did last eight because that was the start of the Mets series. His last eight. Oh, and that's kind of the stretch we're talking about anyway. So I should use the last eight games. His last eight games. 313, 10 hits, a home run, 4 RBIs, and 2 runs in 8 games. He's also added 4 walks, which was actually less than I imagined, but that's because he's been swinging the bat so well. You're not going to walk so much when you're actually making contact. The one thing... sorry. Ooh, I tried to hold in that.
We call. Lost him.
Yep. The one thing that has really bugged me about Alex Call, and he did it again tonight, the freaking bunting.
Yeah,
stop. Well, bunting, and that might not even be him. It might be.
It's not. that's a Davey special.
You go ahead and talk. I'm about to have a coughing attack. Yeah. Okay. Talk about his idiotic bunting calls.
Yeah. No problem. We can actually reference tonight's game that just ended like an hour ago. So Dave, these are called bunts. Like, Davey really wants to bunt. He wants to put guys in motion, which. No, I can't even try and put a spin on it. It doesn't make sense. And tonight he did it again. First and third, Alex Call, who never has looked comfortable bunting, not once, no, not one time. No, he's never even laid one down properly. He doesn't look right. He's not up there to bunt. So he didn't look right again. And it was a 2-1 count, and they're still putting this bunt stuff on with runners at the corners, one out.
After you have already tried it once and like let everyone know it's coming.
Yeah, and like so he bunts one like right out in front of the plate. Catcher gets it, throws, and gets CJ at off third base because obviously he's off third base. The point is to try and score on the safety squeeze. So like, and he was safe, by the way, which they messed up that ump. The umps messed that up, but whatever. The point is that he comes back up later in the game in nearly the exact same scenario and rips a double in the gap. So. Why are we bunting when we can just rip the double in the gap instead? Like, I don't know. It doesn't make much sense to me. And the bunt play works like once every 10 tries. And I guess that one time is the only thing that they focus on. I read this on Twitter that these are called bunts. These are not.
Yeah, it's a player's discretion.
These ones are Davey's calling these. Like, this is like, so I don't even think. I mean, I guess you can be kind of upset for not executing the play, but like,
yeah, I mean,
it shouldn't be called in the first
it place. Should, yeah. It was just a poor, like, you can't blame poor execution for a poor decision.
Yeah. And they do this thing now also where if CJ Abrams gets on base in front of Victor Robles, they bunt him.
I'm but glad like, you brought that up.
Just steal.
Yes, I mentioned that before. I mentioned that before. But also tonight, it was the second inning, third inning, whenever the Abrams and Robles' first at bats were.
Mm-hmm.
So Abrams singles and Robles attempts to bunt him over. I don't know if it was an error or fielder's choice, but Robles got on. I believe it was an error.
It was an error on Hosmer.
So you have runners on first and second right now with nobody out. That would be the time to bunt. But instead, they let Call swing. And then the next time up, like Trey mentioned, runners down the corners, they try to do a squeeze play. And Abrams gets backpicked at third. because he was barreling down the line because it's squeeze play. The bunt landed right in front of the catcher, and the catcher just picks it up and throws to third. And Abrams has, he's a sitting duck. There was nothing he could do there. He actually might have been safe because of a really good swim move.
He was 100% safe, and I don't understand how they.
So he did everything he could.
Yeah.
And, you know, replay just failed him there. And then, as Trey mentioned, like, you finally let him swing, and, you know, he ropes a double to get two badly needed insurance runs. So it's like the bunt situation that called for it, you let him swing, it doesn't work out. And then the situation where it calls for letting him swing, you bunt, doesn't work out. So it's like, these are the buttons we're talking about with the manager and stuff like that. It, like, if you want to go small ball, use small ball in the right situations. Don't try to get all cute with the small ball approach. Like, I'm a big advocate of small ball. Like, I like the, you know, manufacturing of runs when, you know, things aren't going right. I think it's a very effective. Is it effective over 162 games? No, not at all. But it can be effective in moments and in stretches. And if you're going to do it, you have to, you know, almost use analytics to back that up. If you can't rely on, you know, you're just baseball IQ and you're just situational awareness.
With a guy who already barreled a baseball in the first inning.
That.
That's because he did that and got robbed. And like,
yeah, he's also just not a good bunter.
It was what you said earlier as well. If he had been struggling like he was last week, maybe you bunt. Okay, maybe. Even then, I probably don't do it at first and third with one out. But, you know, I could at least consider it a possibility. But the way Alex Cole's been swinging the bat the last week, yep, you can't bunt him. Like, you have to let him swing.
Yep.
And they did the second time, at least, and it worked. So,
anyways, Alex Cole has looked great when he's not bunting. And let's just not bunt.
And, sorry. Actually, I wanted to mention one thing as well with Cole. Cole is basically what I was hoping Lane Thomas was going to be after the 21 end of the season, where I was like, okay, high walk rate guy that'll get on base enough to be worth it at the plate.
Serviceable, with
solid defense. And he has not done either one of those this year, but Alex Cole certainly has. And when you have the high walk rate approach, like, it doesn't work for everybody, but when you can do it and it works for you, when you do have a slump, when you start to come back,
you're not,
those numbers
unplayable.
Shoot way up.
Yeah.
And you're not as, you don't go as low because you're at least getting on base. I mean, even when he was hitting below the Mendoza line, he was at like a 340 on base. So, and then when he does finally start getting some hits and some driving in some runs and hitting for some power, now he's, I believe he's back over 100 OPS plus now, and he's a pretty good defender. So that, we'll take that.
Yeah, for sure. All right, last guy that has really turned it on recently, and I know you're much more of a fan of him than I am, but Steroid Joe has done well recently. Joey Meneses is 314, 11 hits, 3 RBIs, 2 runs in his last 8 games. He has brought his batting average up significantly in that span. I believe he's at like a 275 clip or something like that. Still not hitting for power, so I guess he's not on the roids anymore, but he's still effective and still putting the ball in play and hitting it hard and has a purpose to this lineup, unlike some people. 267, he went 0-for-4 tonight, which really dropped it. But yeah, Joey Meneses, what are your thoughts, Trey?
Well, I mean, I like Joey as a story mostly just because it's such an interesting thing as an older guy to come up and play well. And I still think he can turn it around. He's hitting the ball hard.
Tell me, Trey, why didn't he get called up before? Did something happen off the field that prevented him from playing?
No.
See, what had happened was
he got busted.
There was an entanglement.
Hey, but there's no like test results anywhere, so we don't. He's hitting the ball hard. The problem is, like Luis Garcia, is everything is a ground ball, and so if he can start elevating, especially on his hits, you know, on his batted balls towards, he hits a lot of batted balls at the second baseman hard. So if he can get it up in the air and start hitting it in that gap.
Shout out Darnell Coles.
Yeah, I know. But that's a big difference. He starts using that right center field gap. And definitely want to see him hit some homers, man. I mean, that's what he did last year, and it's just not happening so far this year. But he is starting to pick up his hits more consistently. So if maybe that's a sign that he can start to really get it going, because the Nats need some power from somewhere, and for anywhere, really.
Anywhere.
We'll take it from anywhere at this point.
Yeah, that is for sure. So speaking of that power potential, we'll talk about a guy who has not been good lately. But before we do that, we're going to pause and get a word from our sponsors.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, we're back, and I am nothing if not fair. I will dish it out. I will take it when it's called for. And unfortunately, I have to do this to my guy. I'm hoping this has the Alex Call effect and motivates him. But Stone Garrett has been bad recently, and it sucks. It hurts my heart. Over his last five games, because keep in mind, Davey refuses to play him all that often.
Yeah, that's over like 3 weeks, man.
Yeah. 1 for 16, 2 runs, 1 walk, 8 strikeouts. Tough. No RBIs. Tough. Just really tough. But at the same time, like, when you're a platoon guy, it's hard to get anything going. I mean, hell, he gave Dom Smith 100 at-bats to get going. It's like, if you gave Stone Garrett truly regular playing time, and I don't just mean, oh, you're going to play both games in the doubleheader, and I expect you to go 4 for 5, like, in both games. That's not realistic. Like, I mean, a regular routine, which he clearly deserves, but instead he's giving it to guys like Lane Thomas and Dominic Smith. And like, what's annoying is Dom Smith made the ugly section, but of course he's looked better recently. But I'm going to just proceed like he's the worst player on this team, which I think is
potentially
argument.
True.
Yeah. But it's like, instead he's giving guys opportunities who don't profile as real contributors. But then, of course, because they're major league ball players and they've gotten to the majors, they like do something great. And I feel like Davey's looking at that as a vindication for his decision making, but he's ignoring like the 20 games prior to that where it was just like absolute, you know,
nothing. This is the Lane Thomas effect.
Whereas like it's Stone Garrett, he's like, oh, see, he went 0-for-4 in the second game on Saturday, and that's exactly why I haven't been playing him. Like, it's just, I don't know. Anyways, I do have to point it out, because the Stone Garrett hype isn't, you know, beating as loudly right now, just because it has been rough. But I don't think that's necessarily his fault. It's hard to get going. Like, you wouldn't expect Jeter Downs to come in and, you know, go 3-for-4 with 2 RBIs, because he hasn't played in like 3 weeks. And like, Stone Garrett was going through that for a while, where like he didn't play in 6 straight games after going like, what was it, 6-for-8 in the Rocky series?
It was
inexplicable.
Awesome.
So,
and he had some extra base hits after that too. I mean, in the Angel series, he had some hits, and he got Shane Bieber a couple hits in the Guardian series as well.
So basically, he's just striking out more, which is in his profile. But his profile also has, like, if you can bear the strikeouts, you're going to be rewarded for your patience, because he can reward you with extra base hits and home runs. And
yeah, and he also hit a couple of balls to deep right center field.
He scorched. He almost had a grand slam before CJ Abrams.
Very closely had a grand slam in that Mets game, and he hit another one in the Pirates series that went to the warning track on right center field as well. So It's not like he hasn't put some good swings on some balls during that time. He's definitely struck out a lot more. And, but you know, it just bothers me because they say it's because of matchups and like,
but Lane Thomas is out there.
They're basically the same kind of platoon type guy, but Stone Garrett is just better in like every aspect. So why play Lane Thomas this much instead? It doesn't make a lot of sense, but, yeah, and also yesterday, Nats go against a lefty, and where Stone Garrett's nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
So it's not, matchup. They're just
talking. Davey's talking out of his ass right now.
Yeah, I know. It's
he does whatever he wants. He doesn't want to have to answer questions about it. Stone Garrett, in his 43 plate appearances, already has 3 barrels. That's a barrel percentage of 11.1. The league average is 6.8. Like,
has the highest WRC plus on the team still.
Yes, yeah, still. And yeah, he's going to strike out, but like not comparing him to Adam Dunn, but like Adam Dunn struck out all the time, but he would hit 40 home runs. So you lived with it because 40 home runs is valuable to any team, especially a rebuilding team, especially a team that's only going to win like
that needs slug
60. Like it's just, you make that trade 10 times out of 10, unless your manager is Davey Martinez. And then you don't make that trade. Apparently. Yeah, it's frustrating.
It's not like Lane Thomas doesn't strike out. I mean, the dude strikes out like 25% of the time. That's really.
But his batting average is so deceptive, and I almost guarantee you, like, that's what Davey is looking at.
I know, because he has a ton of singles, and that's it.
And it's like, it's not like Stone Garrett's a defensive liability either.
He's not. Lane Thomas is the worst defender on the team.
He's like one of, you know, 10 people in baseball with a negative F4.
Yeah, he's literally that has the 5th worst outs above average in baseball. So like, you can't argue that Lane Thomas should be in for defense right now. He can't.
Yeah, not at all. But alas, Stone Garrett, and you know, you do deserve a little bit of, we'll call it motivation, because he, you know, hasn't been good recently, but we believe in you. We're not giving up on you yet.
Yeah. We believe that if he would be given some decent, consistent playing time, that he could be okay.
The best thing for him would be an injury. No, not his injury.
Yeah, okay.
But
yeah,
someone in front of him to get injured.
Well, because the problem right now, obviously, is the Nats don't have a lefty because they have all these guys that can hit lefties,
right?
But not the guy that can hit a righty. So I was thinking about potentially, you know, I mean, I don't. When Corey Dickerson comes back, if he comes back, then they should option Lane Thomas and keep Stone Garrett as the platoon lefty and switch them off.
Oh, they will never do that.
But they won't. They'll send Garrett instead, and that's going to really be upsetting when it happens.
I don't even want to think about it.
I know it's going to happen. It just it sucks, but that's what's going to happen. So,
yeah. The other bad part is the bullpen. Surprisingly enough, and like grand scheme of things, we're sort of middle of the pack, maybe closer to the bottom than the top, but the bullpen ERA has really ballooned in the past couple weeks or the past 10 days or so. We're sitting at a 4.19 right now, which is about 20th or so. 3, 6, 9. Well, I don't know why they just don't number it. 18th. So like, not the worst, not the best, but it was one of the best. I think we were top 10 there for a while, and we had some strong performances. So you would expect that to kind of level out. So maybe that's all this is, but you're seeing time and time again, you know, this bullpen is kind of hanging on by a thread. And I tweeted this out. I think it was during the Mets series, where it's like, this bullpen is Mason Thompson and Hunter Harvey and everyone else is like a good story that's unlikely to continue it. And I know you're a big Thad Ward fan, so I'm not trying to, you know, lump Thad Ward in there. I'm not saying him or any of these relievers can't be affected.
He's a little different case as well.
Right. Yeah. He's a little bit different, but I just mean like Erasmo Ramirez is sub 2 ERA from last year, and Carl Edwards Jr. his, you know, 2.7 ERA from that, like they're just unlikely to continue. And you're seeing that the Nats don't really have people to turn to if Thompson and Harvey are unavailable. And if Thompson struggles or if Harvey struggles, you realize the Nats are kind of screwed because they try to turn to Carl Edwards Jr. And I mean, his ERA is the most deceptive ERA.
I was going to bring that up too.
Like, he struggles in every single appearance. Like,
really bad this year.
I feel like he's had the bases loaded in every single appearance.
Yeah, he has a 1.74 ERA, and it's the most, like you said, it's so deceptive. Like, he has not looked anything close to that level of pitching this year.
All.
Even tonight, he got out of a jam, but like, he put himself in there and then luckily got out of it. But
right. And then like Erasmo Ramirez, he'll have one good outing and then he'll give up three runs his next outing. And it kind of the same with Thad Ward. He'll go two scoreless innings, but then he'll go an inning, you know, walking three guys and giving up two runs. And, you know, Hobie Harris and who's the last guy? The last guy we'll talk about. What's that?
Finnegan.
Well, Finnegan is, I don't care to ever talk about him. I mean, but he's a high stress inning kind of guy too. I was thinking Anthony Banda, but we'll talk about him in a second.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, it's just like you're realizing they don't really have a ton of dependable relievers. It's just like, are they good right now? And most of the time it's, we'll see.
Yeah.
Like that. That's kind of how the bullpens go. But like grand scheme of things, they're fine. It's just over the past week or 10 days or so, like they haven't been good. But over the next 10 days, they could be good. That's just how bullpens go in general. But it's just, you know, we kind of need to scale back our expectations a little bit because they haven't been good recently.
Yeah, no. You know, you mentioned Thaddeus Ward, obviously. I'm a fan of his, but I think that their ultimate plan is to try and make him into a starter eventually, but they have to keep him on the roster this year because he's a Rule 5 pick. And he's been all right. He had a really good outing last night, actually. But yeah, he's got to keep the walks under control for sure. That's definitely been an issue. But then again, he's another guy that barely ever pitches. I mean, Davey has really leaned into Mason Thompson Harvey. What happened?
Sorry. it's just like these Nationals reporters, and I'm not going to name names. I think everyone can.
I definitely know who you're talking about.
Yeah. like trying to give Davey Martinez credit for like letting the team swing away with the game on the line and that producing the win. Like, is he not the same guy who tried to go small ball
two innings before?
Like, all the credit, none of the blame. Like, these team shills.
Oh my God. Like, how can
shill reporters just spewing out the words without any critical thought to it is just.
Well, luckily we pointed out the fact that there was two identical scenarios in this game tonight. And the one time that they did the stupid bunt, it sucked. And the one time and the other time where they didn't, it was awesome.
Yeah. So it's like if
you can't give credit for a play that they messed up the previous two innings ago.
Like, I saw that. I was just I had such a hard eye roll. I was like, I mean, if I burn my house down but then go save my dog, are you gonna give credit for me saving the dog? Like, yeah, no, I burned my house down.
Yeah, you're gonna just ignore the house fire.
Like, I mean, what are we doing here anyway? Sorry, continue with the bullpen.
Yeah, so Thaddeus Ward needs to keep the walks down. I'm glad that we've seen Andres Machado come in to the fold, mm-hmm. because I don't know what they got something working in Rochester with these fastballs, because him, Jordan Weems, and even Willy Peralta have shown these like crazy, like spin efficient fastballs. And Andres Machado touched 98 yesterday, which I have never seen him do. So they got something working down there. Maybe Carl Edwards Jr. needs a visit down there and then he can come back. But I like the way Weems threw the ball when he came up and played. I actually would like to see him again. Machado is here, and that's a good thing, I think, for this squad. I feel like he's got some decent stuff, and so that's good. Fortunately, Anthony Banda.
Yeah.
He was essentially here as a token lefty, because we don't have one, but a really bad lefty is still bad, so it doesn't really matter based on matchups. If you can't pitch to anybody, which is basically what happened. And he has been DFA'd finally, which actually was it was earlier than my prediction, but still too late.
Yeah.
But you know, and then the problem is, like you said, it's just the lack of depth that we thought we were going to have. Like, we didn't think maybe that Kyle Finnegan was going to be this bad. We thought he'd be not amazing, but better than this. And then Erasmo has had some struggles. Although I still think he can turn it around. He's got a high ground ball percentage, which is good. So if he can, maybe he can turn it around, but yeah. For the most part, just guys underperforming what we thought they could do. But the top, Mason Thompson, Hunter Harvey, they've been great. So that's a good thing at least.
Yeah. So we'll see. It's going to be, you know, back and forth with them, but again, we're just talking about the last week or so, and they haven't been great, but we'll see how they do over the next week. All right, let's move on to the ugly segment. I put Dom Smith in there, like I mentioned. The Cubs series and even the end of the Pirates series is really skewing my stats here, because he's been better as of late, and it's annoying.
Yeah. Well, you can just point out the 30 games before that where he was terrible.
Yeah. I will believe it when I see it. Like, yeah, he's had 3 extra base hits in his past, 6 games? He also went 40 games without an extra base hit before that.
Yeah. And I mean, if he goes 40 games and starts hitting extra base hits, maybe we can start thinking about it. But like,
Ryan would lose his mind. Yeah. So we'll see if this is actually going to stick, or if, you know, a squirrel found a nut in the forest.
Yeah. After which a while. Is what probably happened.
It's kind of what I'm thinking, but we'll see. We shall see.
Definitely not rooting against him. Seems like a really nice guy. So
he does seem like a very nice guy.
I want him to have success. It's just not happening.
I'm more angry at the roster construction. Yeah, I don't definitely. And Dom Smith is just, you know, unfortunately the target of that anger, even though he didn't create the roster. That being said, he is so much better at first base than Joey Meneses.
Yeah, defensively, he's freaking sick over there.
But like, Joey Meneses is so bad. Anyways.
If Joey can't turn around with the bat, then I guess whatever, play him over there. Because at that point, you're just getting a bad bat, but you might have a good glove.
Yeah. All right. The other person in the ugly segment is Lane Thomas. We mentioned that. Over his last 10 games, 188, 6 hits. He did have a home run, but the fact that he had a home run and his numbers are still this low just goes to show how bad it's been recently. 4 RBI, 6 runs, 9 games. In his last 10 games. And that doesn't even include defense, like Trey mentioned. Like, he's one of the worst defenders in baseball to start this year. Like, it's been really, really bad. There hasn't been really any redeeming factors about him. And he's striking out a lot. He's not, you know, doing much to warrant such a high strikeout rate. Like, if he was hitting a bunch of home runs, then maybe you accept that trade-off. Like, we mentioned the possibility of Stone Garrett doing that, but otherwise, like, it's been tough to watch. And the fact that he's still getting his reps in the lineup over guys who are more deserving, whether that be a Stone Garrett or even guys like CJ Abrams or Victor Robles, who you would like to see. Well, maybe not Victor Robles so much anymore, but CJ Abrams, who's been hitting 300 over the past week. Like, why not bump it? Anyways, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Lane Thomas, ugly this week. You have any more stats on why the Lane train is no more?
He's just completely lost all his power. I mean, that was the one thing he had going for him at coming out of the end of last year, was he was the home run leader. He had 17. So you can't ignore that. But you definitely can't ignore the fact that he's only slugging .333. That's not going to get it done. And there's even more reason to believe that he's gotten actually lucky, because his BABIP is so high. He's 263 average with a .352 BABIP. And he's not slugging. That's not good. Because if that comes, which it has come back down to earth since the beginning of the season, you see how basically useless he is in the lineup. He's not doing anything. And he's striking out 26% of the time, which is essentially the same as Garrett. So he's not really doing anything to warrant playing time right now. And it sucks. I was trying to hold out for him because he's had these stretches of hitting where he's been all right. And then, but he's just, it's inconsistent. And when he's bad, he's really bad.
He was nowhere on my radar to start the year. My attention was on Dom Smith. It was on Alex Call. It was on Joey Meneses. It was, you know, on all these other guys. But then, you know, I kind of looked around and I was like, holy crap, Lane Thomas is worse than all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't done anything really. Like, there's been some plays in right field where he's looked outright horrible. Like, I feel like Lane Thomas is who Davey Martinez thinks Stone Garrett is. Like, I feel like he's got them mixed up because Lane Thomas has been terrible. And listen, you know, last year I was fine with him as a fourth outfielder. Again, I had no issues with him. But if you go off of this season, it's been terrible and there hasn't been any redeeming factors. And it's,
yeah, if you're going off this year, he can't be a fourth outfielder.
He can't be on a roster.
Yeah.
Like, he needs, I don't know if he has options. Yeah, he needs to be sent down.
Yeah, no, they need, I was saying when Dickerson comes back that I'd really, if they do the right thing, it would be sending Lane Thomas down.
Oh, man. I hope.
We all know it's going to happen. Just mentally prepare yourselves, everybody.
All right. Last one. And I feel bad. I don't want to kick a horse while he's down, but Anthony Bonda, did make this section prior, like when we created the show doc, prior to the news that he was being DFA'd.
It's not his fault. He shouldn't have been on this team. No. It's just he was there because they thought they needed a left-handed pitcher, and that's just how he's.
You just don't need a lefty in the bullpen when you're a 55-win team. Just have the best pitchers you can. And yeah, I'm not playing
matchups very often.
I mentioned this when it happened. I was stunned that the team DFA'd Andrés Machado. I was like, I didn't expect that whatsoever.
Yeah, he looked great in spring as well.
He was great last year. Like, yeah. Truly. I'm going to pull it up so I'm not talking out of my ass. But like, when I got or saw that news, I was like, holy hell, they must have really high faith in the rest of these guys to DFA him. Like, last year, great might be slightly exaggeration, but 3.34 in 59 innings last year was super solid. And even in 2021, he had a 3.53 in 35 innings.
He threw 60 innings last year?
Yeah. Like, wow, he
that's
was
actually okay. Yeah.
Super solid.
I didn't even realize he had thrown that many innings. But
yeah. Yeah. So,
well, like I said, I'm glad that he's gotten a chance now. So,
yeah.
And like I said, he's touching 98 miles per hour with the fastball. That is nothing to scoff at. I mean, and it's got that good ride on it too. So, like I said, I don't know what they're doing in Rochester, but they got something working down there.
Yeah, whatever it is, keep doing it.
Keep giving me these heaters, for real.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, that concludes the good, the bad, and the ugly. We will see who goes where next week when we record. All right, I have a little game for you. You ready for this?
Okay, sounds fun.
All right. So to wind down the show, we're going to play a game called Over or Under. It's pretty straightforward, self-explanatory. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you a situation, and you're going to say over or under. Here we go.
Okay.
You'll pick it up. Yeah. So I'll give you an easy one. The Washington Nationals, over or under 58.5 wins?
Well, I'm still going to take the over. That's what I would have taken on their base win total.
I just did the white guy surprised look.
I'm still going to take the, because they've been in these games. They've played hard. So I want to believe that some of these guys will really start to break through and get on a decent win. I mean, you know, 58.5 is not a lot. Like, I figured that they could get to 60. So I'll stick with the over for now. Just barely though.
Hey,
still the over, but just barely.
Whatever works, my guy. Whatever works. All right. So we'll go Luis Garcia, over or under 12 home runs. We'll say 11 and a half. That way we can get a true over under. He's at two right now. About
what I'm weighing my like I love Luis Garcia on this side, and Darnell Coles I don't like on this side. I think he's capable.
We're 18% of the way through the season.
I'm gonna go with the over. We're gonna believe in my boy Luis, but it's not his fault. Like they want him to hit the ball on the ground. He's just got to get it up in the air a bit more.
Yeah,
but yeah, he's got two. So, and he had them in three games of
that's true
of each other. So yeah, I'll say maybe he gets like a four game, maybe he gets like a four homer streak in like a 10-game stretch or something. So we'll go with the over.
All right. Victor Robles has 6 stolen bases right now. Over or under 19 and a half on the season?
Over. Blowing it out of the water if he plays every game.
Yeah, I mean, at this
rate. Not even close.
I feel like he's sat like one or two.
He's the only guy that they let run.
Yeah, that's true.
It's annoying. All
right, so we'll do CJ Abrams then. Over, under 18 and a half. He's at 3 right now.
It should be easy over, but they don't run him. So
ever.
They want to bunt him over. I'll take the under. Because they won't let him go. If they would let him run, he'd smash that.
Yeah, this is true. All right, we'll go to the pitching side now. I mean, this is tough because of the run support factor and all of this. But, you know, you can weigh that into your decision. We'll start with Josiah Gray. He's had a decision in every single start. He's had his 4 losses, but I think 3 of them are not his fault. That means 2 wins through what I say, 18% of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Over or under 10 and a half wins.
Oh man. You know, it's funny. He was the opposite last year. He got some wins where he maybe didn't deserve them. And now he's getting DeGrom'd, except for the last 2 starts. He's actually gotten some run support. So, I'm going to go under. And it's not going to be because of him.
Brutal.
It's not going to be because of him. I just, you know, he had 0 runs of support through 4 games. That's really, really bad. So yeah. I'll say that might continue on and he will finish with less. But I bet you he finishes with far better numbers than he did at the end of last year. So I don't care about wins and losses generally, but yeah, I'll say the under.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to go right back to actually, no, we'll go to Mackenzie Gore next because it's the same question. Mackenzie Gore, over or under 11 and a half wins?
Over.
You think?
Yeah, because they've given him support for the most part since I believe he's been provided the most support of any pitcher in the rotation. So because of that, I'll
not having
over.
The numbers in front of me, I would agree.
Yeah, just based on my memory of these games, like he's had some runs, which is I wish everyone could have some runs. That'd be good. But because of that, I'll take the over.
All right. We're gonna go back to Josiah Gray. Last year, 148 2/3 innings. Right now, he has not gone a single start where he's gone less than 5. So the question is, Josiah Gray, over or under 169 and a half innings.
Ooh. Oh man.
He made 28 starts last year.
Yeah, I know. He didn't finish all of his starts, but like, oh, this one's really tough.
I feel like it's a really good line.
That's like, yeah, that one's like, man. Okay, because we've already been going for a while. I'll just cut it short. I'll take the over. I'll take the over because
I like it.
This is assuming he gets all his starts and he has more ways to get guys out now than just the strikeout on the slider. So that's going to help him in situations to get some quicker innings. And so because of that, I'll say the over. It's going to be really close. It's going to be right on that line. I would think if he stays healthy all year and everything, it's going to be really close. But I'll take the over.
All right. Final one. Patrick Corbin, over or under? ERA, a 5.50.
He's right around there right now.
It's 5.74.
Yeah. I'm going to take the over, even though he's actually pitching a little bit better than last year. The run environment around the league is a little bit. Yeah, the run environment around the league is a little bit higher than last year. So I will say the over, even if he does end up probably pitching a little bit better. He's had some decent outings, like not getting completely destroyed every time. So that's better, but it's still not good. But yeah, we'll say the over because of the run environment and because he's bad, but also because mostly because of the run environment.
Yeah. Final question. Not well, that does it for over under. Why are the Nats so bad at home?
It's funny. It's like a full team wide thing too. Like I remember they were talking about Josiah's struggles at home, and he's actually been all right this year besides the Braves game. But yeah, it's like CJ Abrams was like had a split that they pulled up at some point where he was hitting like 395 on the road and like 180 at home. So I don't know, man. It's weird. It's just a weird thing.
Yeah, like CJ Abrams
4-12 or something.
CJ Abrams 271, 314, 521 on the road, 213, yeah, 302, 255 at home.
That slugging is crazy. Why can't he?
So he's 830 OPS on the road and a 550.
That's wild, OPS wild splits. And it's Gray, it's him, it's Lane, it's tricking everybody.
Nats Park. Bad place to play baseball.
Yeah, unless you're every other team that comes in.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty decent hitter's park. So it is. It's so weird. I don't know. It's bizarre.
Yeah. CJ Abrams also really bad in day games.
What's his slash line?
All right. In night games, he's 288, 373, 481. Kid loves the bright lights. Day games, 186. 222, 279.
You know what that tells me? CJ Abrams vampire. Might be a vampire.
Nailed it.
Yep. So we may have found the secret to his success. Only night games allowed.
Only night games from here on out.
Yeah, we gotta find find the specific shortstop that is really, really good splits during the day.
Yeah. And then platoon them.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, those 4 p.m. games where it's gonna be like right in between. Maybe just defense replacement
ones. Yeah. Maybe you play Vargas that day.
All right. That does it for this episode. Trey, you got anything else? Any final thoughts before we let you go?
Not anything besides thanks for having me. And the YouTube channel is continuing to grow at a good pace. We're almost at 700 subscribers now. So that's pretty dope. So we appreciate you guys tuning in, and I will be posting even more stuff as we continue to go throughout the season. So check that out if you haven't already.
Can't wait. Can't wait, Bart Scott. Michael Scott. Wayne Gretzky. Bart Scott. All right. That does it for this episode. We appreciate you guys listening. You guys can follow Trey on Twitter at reverse 2 R's, 2 S's. Myself at the Coach Moose Show at Half Street High Heat. I don't know what the plan is for next week. If you guys follow Amanda on Twitter, which you should, be sure to send her some nice wishes, good thoughts. She's got a lot going on. Ryan, I imagine, will be back. He just, you know, is busy being a baller. But we'll be back. Maybe we recruit Trey next week. We'll see if he's busy.
Maybe.
We'll see. All right. Anyways, that does it for this episode. Appreciate you guys listening. We will be back next week. And in the meantime, let's go Nats.
Let's go baseball.
There's a new breeze blowing off the banks of the Potomac. A new team's mowing down the ranks of their opponents. The Nationals are smashing balls, so that the commentator who has the calls has passed the wall to see you later. By the early light of dawn, well, you can see they're running scared, cause the kinds of bombs we're launching are bursting in the air. Tell the Library of Congress that they might not want to look, cause we're putting curly W's in every book. Let's go Nats. We've got a game to play. We're gonna win today. Let's go Nats. We're gonna score for score. We're gonna win for sure. You better tell your senator we're shredding the competitors. We're set to send the pennant home for old D.C. Let's go Nats. Let's go Nats. Let's go.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.